This is The Gaggle with David Helfenbein.
This week we have on Mark Preston. Mark is executive editor of CNN Politics. Mark, it is a pleasure to have you on.
Hey, David. Thanks for having me. I enjoyed the podcast.
Thank you, Mark. You have served as CNN's political editor and political director, and now you're serving as executive editor of CNN Politics. What is the difference of these roles, and what does your current role entail?
Well, so, you know, we have the common goal in those previous positions I held, you know, is to try to put out the most compelling, the most interesting political programming, political stories that we can at CNN. What we decided to do in this election year is to remove me from the day-to-day process of coverage and overseeing coverage and try to focus more on long-term picture projects, bigger projects such as debates and town halls, as well as allowing me some more time to going back to my roots as a reporter because, you know, that's my first love. And being the executive editor allowed me to do that.
Actually, that brings me to my next question. So you're in an executive role. You're also a journalist. What do you consider yourself most days? Are you a journalist? Are you an executive? Are you both?
I consider myself a newspaper reporter that works for a television network is what I consider myself, which, you know, some people look cross-eyed at me when I say that. I don't really think there's a difference because in the end goal is to put out the best product that you can. And as a journalist, you're always striving to break a story, to write a compelling story. And in my role now, when I'm working with political programming, my goal is to try to put together an event that is not only interesting and compelling, but also has all the little pieces that you need for the viewers and our readers, you know, for our website and what have you, to actually learn something from these presidential candidates.
You provide election night coverage and analysis on the decision desk. How do you prepare for something like that? What goes into that?
Well, I mean, you know, so I've been doing this now for several cycles, but, you know, we're very lucky to have a talented decision team that's led by Jen Agesta, as well as our former polling director, Keating Holland. They basically oversee the decision desk. And what we do is we hire people in who are experts in statistics, political experts, and, you know, the team is probably about 15 people deep in all night. So, like, on a night of this past primary, when we had five primaries going at the same time, you have all these different groups of people peered off trying to find out the statistical data that would back up the ability for us to go on air and to make a call in a race. So it's pretty interesting. I mean, while I might be on the decision desk and I might be the one who goes on air to explain why or why we're not calling a race or to explain where votes are not coming in because of whatever technicality or because of voting problems, the bottom line is it really is this decision team that really drives the process.
Now, what about the conception and execution of political events, which you have a hand in? When you create a big event, what is the process like? How many weeks or months go into it, for example, a debate or a town hall?
Right. So, you know, just to circle back to your question about, you know,
sure,
do I consider myself an executive or do I consider myself a journalist? This is where you see both worlds collide and, you know, for the good, because what I do is I will sit down and I will plot out a calendar a couple years in advance. So, for instance, for this past election cycle, we really begin in earnest in December of 2013 to figure out how we were going to execute this election year. And when I mean this election year, basically when the presidential debates would start. The journalism part comes in, obviously, because, you know, it's an event that's based upon, you know, tough questions and what have you. But it also, in order to make these things successful, you have to have the trust of the candidates and the political parties in you that you will do a good job and most importantly, a fair job. So that's where that has come in. And because, you know, I was a reporter for so long that I built up this trust with these folks, and it's mutual trust, quite frankly, between them and between myself. about being able to execute an event that both parties can walk away from. And when I say both parties, I mean candidates on the stage, or all parties can walk away from and feel good about it, feel good that, you know, they got a fair shake in it. So for 2016, the 2016 presidential election cycle, you go back to December 2013, that's when I start to conceptualize how many debates do we want to do with Democrats, how many do we want to do with Republicans, what is going to be the parameters that are laid out by both political parties, who should we partner with to strengthen our hand to secure these debates. And then after you kind of lay that out, and you have to be willing to know that it's a flexible schedule or certainly a flexible plan that you're trying to put in place, then you try to conceptualize some other ideas. So these town halls, for instance, which really have been a hallmark for CNN, those are something that I thought we could drop in during dead spots during the presidential debate season. When I mean a dead spot, I mean a week where there wasn't a presidential debate and where candidates would want that national exposure to go on air, to try to sell their vision for America, to take questions, hard questions from voters from particular states. And that really has worked out well for us in this election cycle.
As a two-part question, you joined CNN, I believe, in 2005, right?
I did, in October of 2005.
So how has CNN changed since you first joined, and what is your goal for how people view CNN at the end of this election year? There was a Washington Post article that I read that basically the goal is that you want everyone talking about that they saw something political on CNN, something from this year on CNN that came out of it. So how did the network change, and what do you hope that when people look upon this election year they got out of CNN?
Right. So the first part of the question is, and I don't think that this is exclusive to CNN, but the way that people consume news has changed dramatically, obviously, right, since when I first came here in 2005, right? There's no such thing as Twitter. You know, there was, you know, Facebook wasn't the behemoth that it is. People weren't walking around with one smartphone, let alone two, like most of us do now, certainly in this business. So I think that with CNN specifically, obviously our anchor is our television networks, you know, not only CNN domestic, which people here in the U.S. listen to, but CNN international and CNN Espanol, and then there's all kinds of partnerships with other networks around the world. But what you've seen is the growth, the explosive growth of the internet and how people consume news on their desktop, now moving dramatically to mobile. And one thing like I would praise CNN executives for is that they had the foresight to realize that mobile was a place that they wanted to be out in front of. And they put the investment in, you know, for that to happen. That greatly helps me, certainly as a representative of CNN, when I'm talking to the presidential campaigns or the Senate campaigns or what have you, the gubernatorial campaigns, because it's a lot easier for me to sell how important CNN is, because I no longer talk about this one screen experience where you take a clicker and you put on the television. You know, it's obviously the multiple screen experience. You have the television, you have perhaps your desktop, and you know, if you're in your office. If you're at home, you probably have a tablet in front of you, if not a telephone, an iPhone or some kind of smartphone. So when I talk to the campaigns, I talk about how if people are not getting their news off of TV, then they're getting it off of their smartphone, they're getting it off of their tablet, and you know, more than likely they're getting it from CNN. And that really helps us as a brand, because as I always tell people, those three letters mean something. Those three red letters, no matter where you go in the world, if you flash those letters somewhere, people know what you do and they know the brand, and you know, there's a lot of value to that. And I think that certainly when people come out of this election season, you know, after we elect a new president, it's not over for us. It really isn't, because, or probably for most of my colleagues in the business for that matter, because then you're going to look at the idea that there's going to be a whole change in Washington. No matter who is elected president, there will be a change in Washington. there will be the first 100 days of a presidency. And I would hope that the viewers who have been, you know, coming to us in droves in 2016 will stay with us in 2017. I mean, that's my ultimate goal.
So you started in print journalism, though, right?
I did. Again, you know, back to the idea that I work. I'm a newspaper reporter who works for a television network.
And so, what's your opinion of print journalism today? Has it changed dramatically? Do you think that that print is dying? Do you think print will be dead in 20 years? I mean, what is your opinion on print?
I think I'll always bleed ink, but I think that if you go back to the time when I joined CNN. There was, you know, the newspaper industry was declining at a very fast rate. You know, it was declining just as the internet was climbing, right? So what I think happened is that there was this time where there was a crisis in what will happen to, you know, all these great reporters and writers, you know. When I was working for Roll Call and I was on Capitol Hill, I remember there were reporters who were, you know, writing for the big metro dailies that worked on Capitol Hill that would refuse to write for their website. They only wanted to write for the front page of their newspaper because the newspaper was king. What they quickly came to find out after a couple of years that if they didn't write for the website and write for the newspaper, then they were out of a job. So for us who were a bit younger at the time, we were able to adapt to it a little quicker than I think some folks were. You know, fast forward to where we are right now, I think that content has become king again, meaning there's always going to be jobs out there for good reporters and good writers. The shakeout that we saw, you know, I guess 5 or 6 years ago, where there was this crisis about what was going to happen to journalism as a whole, I think has settled now, and I think people realize that you need compelling stories. You're just going to read them differently. So, for instance, for me right now, I don't often pick up a newspaper anymore. I read everything off of my tablet, and it really is an enjoyable experience. So, I think journalism is really going to enter another golden age, to be perfectly honest with you. I just think that there was a time there where we didn't know how it was going to get there, but we certainly know how it's going to get there now.
A typical day in your life, does it start very early? Does it end very late? Does it depend on what stories there are out there?
Well, every day is a little bit different. So the day of the what we call Super Tuesday 4, I guess, is what we're calling it, when we had Maryland and the whole Estella primary, basically, right, you know, was voting. I was in New York and was up at 4 a.m., had to be in the bureau by 5, was on set at 6, did TV in New York to about 12:45, rushed to the airport, hopped on an airplane, got back to D.C., came in for some briefings, and then went back up again for the election night. Now, that doesn't happen all the time. This just happens to be, you know, one of the very busy days. But for the most part, I think, for myself and for others, here at the network is that you're probably working at about 7 a.m., 7:30 a.m. If not in the office, you're certainly doing emails back and forth as you're trying to structure your day and figure out what direction you're going to take the network or what direction the network's going to go in when it certainly comes to political stories. And then, if you're lucky, you're home by 8 o'clock that night. And if you're very lucky, people stop emailing you at about 10 p.m.
In terms of favorite stories, even favorite books, is there anything you could say that you would really recommend to people who are listening?
The Boys in the Bus is such a great book. It's just a fun read. It's a fun journalistic read that takes you back to a time when reporters were characters, where they would go out all night drinking and they would have these, you know, great big meals, and Sometimes they wouldn't make it up the next morning, and their reporter from a competing newspaper would actually write their story for them so they wouldn't get in trouble. You know, and it's all based upon the 1972 campaign, true story. I'm sure that your listeners have heard of it, if not have read it. But it's, even if you have read it, it is such a great book to read again.
Is Washington, D.C. more divisive than it has been in the past? That's probably a question you've gotten a lot.
Right. Well, so, I worked for Roll Call for 6 years, and I covered the Senate, and really was at the pulse of whether Washington was divisive or not. I do think that there's a trend now in Congress not to try to work together. Although I don't see this as a long-term trend, and I don't know if it's any more divisive than it has been in history. I think because we live in the moment that we think that we're seeing the worst of the political parties' inability to, you know, to get along or to work together. But, you know, I mean, I suppose if you go back to civil rights, I mean, I'm sure Capitol Hill wasn't that chummy. And I think, you know, when you go back to Charles Sumter, you know, who was beaten down by a South Carolina representative, I think it was a South Carolina representative, over the whole issue of slavery, you know, because they had a disagreement over it. I mean, there have been other times when Washington was dysfunctional or certainly divisive.
And so my final question, you seem like someone who loves what you do, and I've asked this every time to two other guests so far, and hopefully in the future. What advice do you have for someone else who would love to follow your career path?
So I would tell you, I have a bizarre career path, and I don't think there's a playbook for it. You know, I'm a newspaper writer, you know, who works for a television network, who does long-term planning for big political events, but at the same time goes out and is a reporter. So I have a bizarre hybrid job. For any budding journalist, though, I do think, you know, the big joke around CNN is that whenever I see interns, I always tell them to run and go get their law degree or to get their MBA, because this is a very difficult business. And, you know, when you reach my age, you want to be able to live a little bit of an easier life. But I would say this, if you love the business or you think you love the business, jump in, see if you enjoy it, see if you like it, even if it's only for a year or two, because those are skills you will be able to carry forth in whatever career you have. If you are able to converse with somebody, if you are able to write in a very coherent manner, you can carry that across in no matter what job you have. And if you really enjoy the business, then you stay in the business. I would caution this, though. It is a very hard business, and it's a hard business on your family if you end up getting married, if you have children. So you've got to look at the sacrifices that you would have to make in order to be successful in this business.
I really appreciate it. Thank you so much for coming on.
Thanks for having me.